We have been trying to figure out how to deal with our own slower moving regional crisis. The question is, how far would you go to help solve homelessness in Seattle? Would you donate to a charity? Would you volunteer at a soup kitchen? Would you build a home in your backyard where a homeless person can live? That is what my first guest wants you to do. And don't dismiss it, because he didn't just dream this up out of nothing. Rex Holbein, welcome to KUOW.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you for having us.
You would like us to have a tiny home on every block of every residential neighborhood in Seattle. And the way you got to this plan is worth telling. It began in your bathroom.
Well, it did in a way. So I'm an architect, and I had moved my office to the Fremont neighborhood. And during that time, this was about 7-8 years ago, I began to meet a lot of people that were homeless. And one of the things that happened for me is that who they were, who their character of person was not matching up to the negative stereotype. And that created an internal conversation for me to challenge that. In that process, I did invite people into my office to use the bathroom. And of course, when I did that, word spread on the street immediately from Ballard to the University District. And really all day long, I had people coming, knocking to use the bathroom. And through that, I got to meet a lot of people, and really set into motion for me the next 7 years of opening myself, opening the business, and subsequently starting a nonprofit from a Facebook page that now has about 45,000 people following it to try to address the issues of homelessness.
People want to know how they can help, right? You found people want to help with homelessness, don't know how?
I think that's exactly it. I'm glad you said that, because it really is not a compassion issue. It is simply that people, when they address an issue that is so overwhelming, they have a difficult time knowing how to start. And that's actually the mission of our nonprofit, is to allow simple, easy ways for people to get involved, to tap into their own empathy, their own compassion.
But just to say a word for people not getting involved, don't we help by paying taxes to build things like emergency shelters?
Of course, yeah. And I think, you know, we're all at a different point in our journey. And if that's what you can do, and if that's where you're at, that's great. But there is so much more when we reach out beyond donating money, when we actually spend time and create a human connection. The journey actually isn't just for that person that's homeless, it's for ourselves as well.
Yeah, well, yeah. Let's talk about the human connection and what the helper, I guess, if you even we want to use that term, gets out of it personally. I want to just first get right at why this is hard. We asked people on KOW's Facebook page, would you put a tiny home in your backyard for a homeless person? And Robin says, definitely not, would not be comfortable with the idea. I am well aware, says Robin, that it is the politically incorrect answer, but as I see it, the odds of getting a questionable individual in your backyard are pretty high. So what is the screen?
Yeah. Well, I would say to Robin, like I would say to anybody, that we're all on this journey as we go through life. We're all opening ourselves at various times to various people, various issues. And we know that the more we open ourselves to an issue, the more we learn. And the more we learn, the more we begin to understand the complexity of that issue. And in that understanding, we open ourselves empathetically. We don't just jump into the deep end of the swimming pool before we learn to swim. We go into the shallow end and splash around a little bit. And we're asking people to begin to, you know, to just say hello, to make eye contact, to do what you are comfortable with, and then move that bar for yourself. So if we just ask in a vacuum, can you put a small home that is fully functional, bathroom, kitchen, sleeping, in the backyards of residential lots, I would expect the answer just in a vacuum to be no. But once you begin to open yourself to the issue and you begin to understand the process and the parts and pieces that have been put into play, such as case management, wraparound care, agencies that are involved, all of the support that's involved, it doesn't become that kind of scary thought. So
yeah, so we're going to talk about, you say this is a fully functioning little house, and we're going to talk about the size and the running water and stuff. I want to now introduce somebody also in our studio with us who overcame that. I don't know, Kim, whether you were how fearful you were of the idea, but this idea of a homeless stranger in the yard is something you're doing. You are hosting Rex's first tiny house in Beacon Hill. Kim Sherman, how did you get okay with a man named Bobby living in your backyard?
It was actually a very easy decision. I can tell you what I'm not okay with, which is having over 11,000 people living homeless in King County. And that has been a real heartbreaking concern for me, you know, for a while. And in my short walk from my home in Beacon Hill to Pioneer Square, where I work, I've seen, you know, as many as 100 homeless people just in that short distance. And I've seen tents with strollers parked outside of them. I've heard babies crying in tents. I've seen wheelchairs, people with disabilities, people with mental health issues, and they're just abandoned. And, you know, it just, that's not okay with me. And this project presented something concrete that I could be involved in that would make a difference.
How did you get over, so as Robin said, the odds of getting a questionable individual in your backyard are pretty high. So how did you get past that or never even be bothered by that idea of a stranger there?
I guess it wasn't, I mean, there are 11,643 homeless people in Seattle. There are a lot of people out there who have their own individual story, came to homelessness for a variety of reasons. And I'm not exactly sure about what questionable means exactly, but, you know, there are a lot of people who are kind and caring and, you know, really good people who have fallen on hard times, who had circumstances where they couldn't pay what is a studio apartment cost in Seattle now, $1,500 a month.
Well, Robin might think that person is priced out and maybe desperate and maybe dangerous. What people want to know, how can I be confident about a stranger? So what's the screening process?
Well, first of all, I would address just even the definition as stranger. You know, I think when we don't know anything about each other, we can make these assumptions. Some people assume beautiful things. Some people see concern. And but I think we have to allow for all of that.
What is the screening process for someone who has that question?
Yeah, so we, every single person that will be living in a block home in the backyard of a residential lot will have to come through a case management agency. So for instance, we're working currently with Chief Seattle Club, Sophia Way, and Mary's Place. All of those case management services will be brought to bear for anybody that is gonna be living in a block home. So we're not just putting somebody in a backyard like Kim and Dan's and saying, good luck. You know, we want that person to succeed. We want them to move out of homelessness and become a healthy, important part of community that can be supported like we all are in community.
Okay, more to say here. Maybe we should describe this home. Give me the picture. How big? What's it look like? What's inside it?
Sure. So the home basically is 125 square feet. It's small. It is completely...
That's like 11 by 11 feet.
Roughly.
Yeah.
It's 16 feet long by about 9. It has a covered porch. Does not include that. That's not included in the 125 square feet. But this home is designed to be completely off-grid, and that means that all of its power comes from solar collectors, all of its water from rain catchment. That water is contained in a cistern, purified, and even used for drinking water. And all of the waste is taken care of locally on the site, meaning that there's a composting toilet and there is subsurface irrigation for the shower and the sink.
Okay, you're getting at what maybe the biggest, most common question we got on Facebook, which was, does this backyard house have running water? Are they going to be able to take a shower? Is there a toilet?
So yes, absolutely. On the health department side, we are still in process for getting completely off-grid. In other words, being able to take care of the waste on site. But that is coming from the top down, from Patty Hayes, the director of the health department, King County. They want to see this happen, but they have to obviously go through their own checklist to approve it. Currently in Kim and Dan's yard, the home is completely powered by solar energy and is hooked up to their sewer and their water.
Okay, so it's small. So if someone who's thinking, what about all the space in my yard this will take up? It's It's 125 feet square. And Kim, how did you get to know Bobby? And where is he? The health department hasn't signed off on this now. Where is Bobby now? How'd you get to know him?
We met Bobby through Chief Seattle Club, which is one of the social service agencies that Facing Homelessness is working with in the Block Project. And I think the process was a little different for us because we're first, but we just talked to the agency and talked about what we were, what kind of a neighbor would work well for us. We're fairly introverted folks. We tend to not be very loud, so that was, you know, could be a concern for some people if they have issues with noise. My partner is a musician. So we looked for points of connection and somebody who would be a good personality fit.
So the personality, you're introverted, so that you, it's better if this person is not very talkative toward you?
I don't think
what?
It's not talkative, but we were just looking for a personality fit, like you would with any new friend, acquaintance.
But what's that for you?
Well, the person that is moving in, Bobby, is really fun. He's just a sweet man. He's 75 years old. He has been homeless for about a decade. He's very kind and generous, and he's got a great sense of humor. So he ended up being a great fit. He's also a musician, amateur musician, has played guitar and harmonica, and
that helps.
Yeah, so that's a, you know, it's a point of connection. I like to garden. He likes to garden.
Okay.
So it was a good fit.
Rex, is this a matter of partly of social skills? Because what if somebody would like to live in a tiny house in someone's backyard, but they don't have the smoothest social presentation?
Well, I think, you know, there's a fit for everyone, right? I mean, we all meet friends in our lives, and I think what Kim is articulating, one thing she left out that I want to add is that Kim and Dan have been volunteering at Chief Seattle Club as well, just to continue to get to know Bobby better, and quite honestly, to better understand Native American culture. All of this is meant to try to create relationship, and Bobby and Dan and Kim have become fast friends, which is a testament to really to this, I think, to the project, but also to their efforts of wanting to make this happen.
Kim, how do your Beacon Hill neighbors feel about Bobby, and what do they know?
The folks we've talked to have been really positive. We've talked to all of our neighbors on our block. We were a little nervous about it. We don't know some of them very well, but we went around and knocked on everybody's doors, and the folks that weren't home, we left them information, and we've had only positive feedback.
Wow. You brought your neighbors into this, even neighbors you didn't know well. What did you say? You left them a note? What was your pitch?
Our pitch was that we were going to be building a small house in our backyard to provide housing for somebody who doesn't have housing.
We're not asking permission. We're letting you know this is happening.
Well, the way the Block Project works, if anybody had had objections, we would have tried to work through them. But if they had kept those objections, we wouldn't have done the project. We want people to be on board. We don't want to add trauma to the person, to either the neighbor or the person who's been experiencing homelessness. We want this to be a community project.
You know, what's interesting to me is someone who might feel like Robin, who we introduced earlier, who is wary of this idea of a tiny home for someone in your yard, but doesn't want to be the openly politically incorrect jerk. And we'll see what that's going to be like for them. Have you thought about that?
I don't feel like the reactions we've gotten have been any thinly veiled dissent. Everybody has been very positive. Neighbors have come by wanting to see the progress on the house. It's been really, really positive.
You both are so natural about this, so positive. You're in that world. I was approaching this as the idea of, okay, how am I going to describe this to listeners who are thinking, like Robin, heck no. I mean, they're just. What if the person is this person is safe and whatever acceptable means to that homeowner, but they're in a home instead of an apartment because they don't want to live with a stranger. I have an au pair from China living with me, and people say to me, "How do you do that? Just how do you have a stranger in your midst? That's awkward for a lot of people.
I think it's important also to realize that this project is not for everyone, not for every person that owns a home, and it's also not for every person that's homeless.
But you said you'd like to see one on every block or in every residential neighborhood in Seattle.
Yeah, we would like to take the bulk of the homeless crisis as a burden off of the available housing options in the social service agencies that are in place. If we do that, and right now, let's be clear, all of those agencies are stressed out. They're all overworked. They're all underfunded. We have a crisis here, and we're not meeting the need, not by a long shot. So if the Block Project can take the bulk of that weight out of the formula, then you can take all of the people that do this for a living professionally, right up and down the line from housing to mental health to drug dependency to all of it, then they can more accurately, more effectively do their job because there are a lot of people on the street who got there for reasons that are not too different that would affect any one of us. You know, it could be a loss of a job or a divorce or some medical occurrence. So we have to open ourselves to people that are in severe crisis that honestly, really, if we're being open about this, could happen to any one of us. I think that's where we begin to kind of see this issue differently, that they're not all this big scary issue of, you know, which really is, what is the negative stereotype, right? We are seeing all of these 11,643 people in this county as a group and defined often by that negative stereotype, when in fact that's not true. People have their own stories and their own very real reasons why they came to homelessness.
That's Rex Holbein, an architect and the founder of Facing Homelessness and the leader of the Block Project.
Yep, I'm going to throw in that Jennifer Lafreniere, my daughter, also a partner in Block Architects, equally involved in designing and putting this project forward.
And Kim Sherman, your final word, you called yourself an enthusiastic guinea pig. Right? Did I get that right? Maybe someone said that about you. Anyway, right?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay, sure. Why not?
I can live with that label. Okay,
you'll roll with it. What is your pitch? What's your final word to people listening to you now about how you go from someone who's like most of us, concerned, taxpaying, maybe donating of money, of sleeping bags, of help? What do you say to someone about what it takes to become the host of someone in your yard in a 125 square foot home?
For me, it was a really easy decision to make. So maybe I was at that point in my journey, as Rex was saying. But the project is really well set up and really well thought out. So Dan and I, our role is just to provide the space and to be good neighbors. So to address Robin's concern about somebody that she's not comfortable with, we don't need to be social workers. We don't need to be case managers. We don't need to be healthcare providers. There's somebody who is in that role, who's a professional, who can provide all those needs. So really, all we need to do is provide a little space and be good neighbors. So it doesn't feel like a very high bar for somebody to get to.
Provide a little space and be a good neighbor. Kim Sherman and Rex Holbein describing the Block Project coming to Seattle. We'll see how far it spreads. And I want to thank both of you for coming in and telling us about it.
Bill, thank you for giving us this opportunity.
Thanks for having us.
Last year, we talked with a couple in Shoreline who built a homeless camp in their backyard. They shared their small house and backyard with a dozen people, including kids. You might be interested in their story. We're going to tweet out a link to that right now, @KUOW.